From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
Yes, mate. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. It was Friday of last week. My son is out in the backyard playing, and he says, Dad, it's raining. And I said, no way. Remember Friday? It was kind of overcast.
Yeah.
I mean, depending on where you live, you may we have a fair reach here. We don't know. And if you're listening online, you could be listening anywhere. But so it's raining. And I said, you know, of all the months in the Sacramento Valley that you can guarantee it wouldn't rain, it's July.
That's true.
June, once in a while, it's still late spring. And August, once in a while, it's early fall. And you might get it. But July is sacred, and it rained. And it had that wonderful smell when it hits the hot pavement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't even know what the smell is. It's the smell of rain on hot pavement when it hasn't rained for a while. But not so in the last few days. So, but it's summer. That's, you know, it's why things grow and wilt. Jane, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
God's Heart and Hands Ministry.
Mm-hmm. All about motherhood.
And so much happening in our world, and sport. And it's interesting, the Holy Father, he's come out, not with an encyclical, but he came out, had a commission he appointed, and I shared some of it a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about sports, the importance of sports, how big they are. And mm-hmm. I mean, it seems like every year they get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And he taught this report, 50-some pages, analyzed especially youth sports and said that they're becoming so important that you and so specialized. I play soccer year-round. I mm-hmm. play basketball year-round. We have a basketball player in our family, and it's like, oh, the season's over, the school season,
mm-hmm.
it's over, and suddenly here's this camp run by the same people that are coaching the school team, you know,
mm-hmm.
but it's a camp. It's a voluntary, you know, but if you want to be on the team next year, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes this, when I was a kid, you know, we played football in the fall and basketball in the winter and baseball in the spring. And,
mm-hmm.
and as a result, none of us got very good at any of it. But now there is enormous specialization and enormous, mm-hmm. you know, you have travel ball and you have all, and the hazards of that, the benefits of it, but also the hazards of it. Every kid is not going to the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
Every kid is not going to the World Series or the Wimbledon final.
Mm-hmm.
Any of that, you know, very few are.
Mm-hmm.
And this sort of push for excellence, this sort of drive for excellence is something to watch out for, that
mm-hmm.
sport ultimately is for enjoyment and recreation.
Mm.
And it's become really a lot more than that. And what attracted me to this story, the fact that it was from the Pope, but besides that, was the headline saying, it's okay to go to the game on Sunday.
Oh.
Only after Mass. So, because, you know, day of rest, what does that mean? In many ways, it means rest in the Lord. This
mm-hmm.
this is your time to get away from everything else and rest in the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
The Lord, you know, people say, well, he did the whole universe in 7 days. Well, actually six.
Mm-hmm.
Rested on the seventh day.
Right.
And I don't know if he turned on an NFL game or not.
He had multiple screens going at once. You could just see it. You could just see it. And he knew the outcome anyway, so.
He knew the outcome anyway.
But that is something that mothers are having to deal with in this generation, and God's Heart and Hands Ministries is all about motherhood and bringing it back to the table and reminding us that it is a job and we don't need a paycheck and so on. And that you're right in that we are specialized in childhood. We're before, when you mentioned that we did all these sports and we didn't become excellent in any of them. And at the same time, we knew we weren't going to the Olympics. And this is something that mothers have to deal with in this generation. And I'm so glad that the Holy Father is speaking out about it, because mothers are encountering, and families are, and fathers are. But God's Heart and Hands is the Lord is guiding us to focus on mothers, because it is being diluted and fractured and told to put it off to someone else doing it, that everything will work out fine. The kids grow up anyway, right? But it's, we have influence, and someone's going to raise those children. Someone's going to mold them and how they interpret things and so on. And part of the job we do is looking at what mothers are dealing with in this generation that we haven't before. Mm-hmm. And so where do they go for guidance? And one of the things I love about our Pope right now is he speaks up about anything that he sees that he thinks needs to be addressed.
Right.
And so he doesn't need to have a reason to talk about that other than he is our shepherd. He is that for us, our Holy right. Father. And so mothers, we have to navigate that for our kids, is that they're not going to go to the Olympics. Do we make the choice to devote that much family time? And even if we have a kid that's typically, you know, in a family, one will be athletic and another one will be academic or musical or artistic or something else, or their skills just show up later, their gifts show up later. They're not an athlete at four yet, but yet if we're not, God, I remember getting a lot of pressure with my kids. If you don't have them in soccer when they're four, they're not going to be able to, and it was just scripted out. The ripple effect was forward many, many ripples if you didn't have them in soccer
at four. And especially, you know, with kids. I remember seeing this in my own experience with sports, which I was, you know, I grew up loving sports, have followed sports all my life, was mm-hmm. a sports writer for years and for a newspaper. And, you know, and kids mature at different rates.
They do.
Here's a kid that, you know, is striking out every time in the fourth grade mm-hmm. and decides he never wants to play baseball again. And sometimes the kid who sticks with it is the home run king in the sixth grade.
That's
because
right.
suddenly something clicked, or he got bigger and stronger.
Right.
He overcame his fear of getting hit in the head with a baseball, uh-huh. whatever it was. Or frequently, like in a sport like basketball, the young kids, the tall kids, they get all the rebounds.
Mm-hmm.
They make all the points because nobody can shoot from very far. They're all standing under the basket, and the tallest kid keeps getting the rebound and keeps shooting, and about
right.
the 14th one goes in. And the short kid finds this game isn't for me. This is for tall kids. And then one day the short kid grows, mm-hmm. but has already quit basketball.
Good point.
Yeah. And
right.
So you never know where it's going. And then you have the injury factor, and you talk to doctors and they say, yeah, we're seeing way, 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 way more of that in kids than we used to,
yeah.
because they're playing the sports all the time.
Right, and using those same ligaments.
And using the same things.
Right?
There's never kind of an off season. There's never kind of a rest, mm-hmm. a rest period where you're doing something else. You know. And
interesting you say that, because we know as adults that the athletes are better CrossFit, you know, cross training. That we know that as adults.
Yeah.
But as a child, what inherently children did before is you played basketball, you're talking about a season, and football and tennis or volleyball or so on. So your body got a cross training.
Right.
Just inherently. And now we're not doing that. And we are seeing those injuries. And we need to, like, look at the bigger picture. How is it that when kids didn't do all of that then, where they were playing by the season, when you're talking about in the schools, we still had an NFL. We still had an NBA. We still had world-class athletes.
Yeah.
But now we think if we don't shoehorn them in pretty early, that we're going to miss something, and they're not going to be all they can be athletically. So we've muddled it, so to speak. And the job of a mom and a dad is to how to interpret it and help your child navigate it so they don't quit the sport, so they can keep going. And so that a couple of years later, when they're not afraid of hitting the ball anymore, they're still in there.
They're still in there, yeah.
Yeah, and really, honestly, the other piece is, what is God's plan for them? They're going to grow. Some kids grow early. Some kids grow late. All these different capacities, but we've narrowly defined what can work, and we're leaving out for ourselves a lot of gifts of athletes.
Well, you know, I've had the pleasure in the last month or so to attend the Collar Cup, which was the Seminarians against the Priest in soccer,
uh-huh.
and the Sacramento Classic, which was the Seminarians against the Priest in basketball,
mm-hmm.
and both had great crowds. Both were very spirited. Both were a lot of fun. And both were very competitive, with some pretty darn good athletes out on the field or on the basketball court. And the crowd loved it. And the sportsmanship was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the best of sport, of what sport was always supposed to be about.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, I have a tennis in my background.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember after college going to Europe and playing some tennis tournaments.
Wow.
And one of my college buddies who was on the team with me in college, and we were in Ireland.
Uh-huh.
And when we would play tournaments in the United States, especially in California, it was like life and death.
Mm.
It was competitive and it was...
intense?
Very intense. Very, very intense. In Europe, it was so different. These Irish guys, it was like, they want to know all about California. They want to know, we in the middle of a match, where generally the opponents don't talk to each other. They just,
right.
These guys, there's a break every two games where you switch sides of
mm-hmm.
and there's a minute break where you sit there and towel off and have a drink. And the Irish guys are always saying, hey, you want to come to the pub with us after the match? It's something you just never would have heard in a competitive tournament in the United States. Where the opposition is almost the enemy.
Right.
And it was very clear to me, for these guys, it was sport. This is what we're doing.
Wow.
And it's just sport. And it's part of our life, sure. And it was just part of my life. I had a
right.
job and I had, I wasn't going to win Wimbledon or anything.
Right.
But for them, it was really just sport. Their ego wasn't on the line. They wanted to win. They played hard.
Right.
But it wasn't like, oh, man, I've been stripped of my manhood because I lost this tennis match.
Shame. Yes,
yeah.
There's no shame.
Yeah, we're gonna go get to the pub with these guys afterwards.
Interesting.
My buddy felt the same way. It was just like, wow, this is so nice.
It is. And so as a mom, I hear that story, and I take it with me. And when I interact with kids, because I interact with a lot of kids being a private math tutor of all ages from kindergarten through high school, I take that story with me. And when the kids talk about things, I interact that way. I will then bring that to them. And that's what we do, what mothers need, what motherhood needs, and what families need is it's the ultimate is it takes a village to raise a child, but we do live by each other's stories. We take them and move forward. How many negative stories there are right now, and where people are getting pessimistic. And Pope Francis came out and said, joy, joy. Christians can never be sad. You have the Lord. He is carrying you on your shoulders. We know how this is going to end. Have joy. And then we can actually, when we think of that and take the story that he's handing us, we then can raise a very different child and a very different family in an environment that's always got positive and negative. It's just that now so much of it is so close. Before, it was distant. Media was distant. It was, three channels on the TV, half an hour of programming, and so on and so forth. But now it's right there, and everybody's got... just driving around the historic district in Folsom, down by Sutter Street, how many families walking, standing, they all have a screen in front of their face. They're all taking in a story. Separate stories, but they're all taking in stories. So we as mothers have to look at what are the stories that are out there? What is the story my child needs to hang on in athletics for a couple of years? And then how do I help them navigate? How do I give myself stories? Just that you saying that, well, now I can interpret sports for my child and frame it differently. Not what did you do wrong? What camp are we going to – we can get you special tutoring to get this plié great in ballet so you can be and do when you're 8, or 12. You're going to do this and go to this academy and so on, and your summer's going to be spent doing 6 weeks of intensive. I just want to play with my friends, Mom.
Yeah.
But it's very confusing, and it's a very challenging time to be a parent because we have never been so invaded by people's opinions, expectations – and so on. But we have to look beyond it and what is God's plan for each of these children, because it's very different. And these children are not all the same. And we all know that some of the athletics shows up early, some shows later. My son was 5'7" in eighth grade, and he's like 5'9" now. But thought he was going to be a giant. He had athletics, and yeah, he really did rule the court when he was in eighth grade. because he could miss the shot at one end and be down on the mm-hmm. other basket before the ball ever got there. He just had that early power. But another kid showed up late in high school and he dominated high school ball. So it's just perspective. And I had to help him have the perspective of, okay, this is a gift. You're a team. What are you going to do? How are you going to? It's what you do with it. It's what you do with. And I said to them, both of my kids, the one thing I will come back and haunt you for, if I can even do it, but it was fun to say it, is if you do not bring the gifts God gave you to the world, that is what you are to do. That is, frames everything. You were sent here with a purpose or purposes, things to do, and that's what you need to strive for. And everything else is just peripheral to it.
Yeah, and so, you know, with my kids in sports, I've always tried to tell them. It's the same thing my dad told me. He said, you've got teammates. You be the best teammate in the world. You know, the old golden rule, do unto others as you would. You know, if you're the last guy on the bench, rarely play, you are still part of that team. Mm-hmm. And vice versa, if you're a starter and a star, that guy, the last guy on the bench, is still your teammate.
Yeah, he's still in the picture. He's still in the field.
Worthy of, and treat the opposition the same way. They have the same hopes and dreams, and you know the opposition is not the enemy.
Right.
You know, right. Somebody falls down, help them up.
And that draws such attention when they do. Such what was the baseball? Was it high school where the pitcher and the catcher were on opposite teams and they were best friends and it was a championship game? And the catcher went up and hugged the pitcher, or, you know, no, I'm sorry. They were the batter and the pitcher were on opposite teams. And the game was decided and the pitcher was forlorn. And rather than celebrating, the batter went and hugged his friend. And it was really big, like, woo, sportsmanlike conduct here. Okay, I'm really glad we caught it. But in Ireland, it would probably be no big deal. That's what you expect. It's a sport.
It's a sport.
And we have the bigger picture. They have it, rather. And that's what we need to bring to and that's just one small piece. But it is a very influential piece in families right now with sports.
Well, the I think one of the problems is that we've gone from, I mean, sport has been with us for a long time. We had the ancient Olympics years
it started.
Ago. It's been and they attracted their crowds, and long before we had national television of anything. I mean, Notre Dame would play Army in the 20s, and they would in football, and they'd draw 100,000 people. So I mean, there was still a lot of attention on it, and newspapers, mm-hmm. of course, would cover it. But now there's so much media attention on every sport, and every sport. I can remember many of my experiences in sport. You know, you were in a league, whether it was baseball or tennis or football or basketball or what it was, and 10 teams in the league or 8 teams in the league, and you'd play each other once or twice, and then the season would end.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody would be the champion because they won more games. Now you move on. Now the champion moves on, and they play other champions. And it funnels down until you've got one national champion or state champion or world champion.
Mm-hmm.
And the World Cup is the classic of mm-hmm. this, where it just funnels. But it's in virtually every sport. Mm-hmm. High school basketball, it's now, we now have state champions. You know, you may have won your Delta League or whatever league you're in, and high five each other, and it's the end of the season. Oh no, not now! We're in the playoffs, and what it guarantees is that every team, no matter how good they were, every team except one, their final game of the year will be a loss.
Mm. Wow, wow!
Yeah,
I've never quite. Wow! So everybody's going to end on that.
I used to explain to my kids when I was playing tennis. My kids. I explained to my kids now that when I was playing tennis,
got it.
Because I didn't play much tennis when I had kids, but the tournament starts, and then, because they say, "Well, did you win? Did you win?" And I said, "Well, there's 64 people starting in this tournament,
mm-hmm.
and it's you lose, you're out.
Single elimination.
So you have 32 first round matches,
mm-hmm.
matching the 64 people, and so." Right off the bat, in the very first round, you say, oh, how'd you do? Oh, I lost in the first round. Like, tragedy.
Interesting.
Well, you're already in majority company.
Right.
32 people just lost in the first round.
True.
Whether it's Wimbledon or whatever it is,
right.
or just the local city tournament. Well, then in the second round, which still isn't very far advanced, nobody thinks you're very good, half of them lose.
That's
now you're
true.
Down to three quarters of people have lost.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty soon you're down to the finals. There's two guys left, or women.
Right.
And 62 other people are already out. They've
wow.
already gone home.
Oh, my. Wow.
and then, so you got to the finals. Wow. And then you lost.
Yeah,
how did you
that's
do? I
true.
Lost. I lost in the finals. You know,
the first word out of their mouth is, I lost.
You have. That's why I never want to say to a little leaguer, how'd you guys do today?
Yeah.
You see kids, some kid
right.
down at the yogurt shop, and
right.
he's still got his uniform
yeah.
on, you know, and you just say, did you have a good game? Or
yeah,
you know,
I would say, did you have fun?
Yeah, did you have fun?
Yeah.
You know, but how'd you, oh, we lost. So you had 64 people. One of them won, and 63 of them, their last memory is they lost. Whether it was the first round or the second round or the third
right.
round or what it was. So, and that's the way all of our sports are. It's this big funnel which just narrows it down. And we see it in the World Cup, which started with, I think, 2,860 countries.
Uh-huh.
And they had these, you know, all this stuff that goes on for seemingly forever.
Right.
And then you narrow it down. And I'm not very interested in soccer because I'm an American. I need lots of scoring. You know,
single digit one hand.
I think soccer should give 7 points for a goal, and then a 2-1 game is 14-7. Everybody goes, whoa, boy, it was 14-7.
Isn't that interesting?
Like it would be in football.
That's right.
Football, a game that's 14-7, that's 2-1.
You know, in football.
And everybody thinks that's
people
fine.
People wouldn't watch it if it's 2-1.
Yeah.
If you win 2-1. All that, just 2-1, that's nothing.
But, you know, nonetheless, I got a little bit. It was funny because my son and I were sitting around, and I think I was watching the news, and I thought, you know, I think this World Cup semifinal or whatever has been going on for a couple hours. And I switched over to, I forget who had it, ESPN, Fox, I think, mm-hmm. had it, and switched over to that. And there they are. They're tied, and they're going into the penalty kick phase. And I go, we timed this perfectly, because
yes.
that's really fun to watch.
It is.
You know, each team gets to shoot five times, and it's just one person against the goalie. And it's instead of all this kicking and no scoring, you know, there's a lot of scoring. And it's very exciting. It's very tense. And I said, oh, boy, now if this was the whole game, if they should just do this, this should be the whole game. But and we watched it, and by golly, it was Croatia.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it was good, bad, or whatever, but my very first thought was Croatia, very Catholic country.
Mm-hmm.
And I started rooting for them. And I don't know if that's right or wrong. I started rooting for
them. Well, you had a connection with them. You found a connection.
There was a human connection. Yeah.
You obviously didn't find it in the game because it wasn't high enough scoring,
and
you found it with faith.
Most people,
right.
when they go to Medjugorje,
uh-huh.
which is a not yet approved apparition site,
mm-hmm.
It's actually in Bosnia, but most people, I believe, go through Croatia.
Mm-hmm. That's my understanding.
And Croatia is very Catholic country, and so I start rooting for them.
Uh-huh.
And then they win, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going. This is fabulous. What you were telling me before the show that the Croatian coach.
Yes.
Carries a rosary in his
oh
pocket.
Oh, my gosh. Is that talk about a
squeezes
story.
Squeezes it extra tight during the penalty kicks.
Thank God it's not squishable. But he does. And the two parts that struck me most about him is that he keeps it in his pocket. And when it gets difficult, he puts his hand in his pocket. He said, I cling to it, and then everything is easier. That's a story I'm going to keep with me. In fact, I'll probably start trying to find a way to do that. And that just speaks volumes. That's a story of a man that is keeping he walks with God constantly. He is very much aware. And the second part was, and this speaks to that, is he said, everything I've done in my life and in my professional career, I owe to my faith, and I am grateful to my Lord.
Yeah, you know, and I carry a rosary most of the time, almost all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to be, and especially as a parent, this is not a good luck charm. It's not like, yeah, I got this rosary in my pocket, so I'm okay. You know, this is
right.
It's your faith. It's
a tangible piece. I'm going to reach for
it. It's a tangible piece, and right, it's not just sitting there. Hopefully, you're taking it out and praying it.
Yeah,
you know, and it's not. In other words, it's not just. Because you can do that. You can get where you're. This is a thing that allows me to pray,
mm-hmm,
and it's comforting to have it with me even when I'm not praying the rosary.
Mm-hmm.
But you do have to, especially in teaching your kids, is no, it's not a good luck charm. It's not just something put in your pocket and it's a good luck charm.
It's a reaching for. I think it's the reason the thing I take out of it with stories, we take what we can and try to live it and interpret it, is that by him having it with him, it's a reminder. I'm going to reach for God.
Yeah,
I'm going to reach for God, and it's other people call repeat.
Be with me whether this game goes well or doesn't go well.
Yes,
it'll go well if God's with me. God will be there to comfort me when that final penalty kick bounces off the crossbar.
Uh huh.
Or because, you know, it's not, let's be honest. We all pray for victory, but
right,
but
it's sweeter.
But be with me, be with everybody here.
Mm-hmm.
Help us make this somehow, make something that happens during this game bring us all closer to you.
That's beautiful.
As opposed to have this guy on the other team miss.
Right.
I remember one time watching a college football game, and it came down to the last minute, and the kicker goes out. Major college football game. Oregon State against Oregon. The Civil War. It's the final game of the year, and it's for bragging rights in the state. And it's a big, it's like Cal, Stanford, USC, UCLA, Harvard, Yale, okay, those kinds of rivalries. And it comes down to the Oregon State kicker goes out, and they're behind by 2 points. Long field goal attempt, makes a sign of the cross before he kicks. Boom! Right down, straight through the middle, and there's about 30 seconds left in the game, and now Oregon State's ahead by 2 points or two. And yet they kick off. Oregon has a good run back, and by golly, here's Oregon now with a long field goal with the final second. It'll be the final play of the game to win the game. And the Oregon kicker goes out, and he misses. And so Oregon State wins. So it was years ago, and so I thought this would be an interesting little radio interview. So we get the Oregon State kicker on the radio. And I said, so you make the sign of the cross. Well, yeah, I'm asking God to help me, you know.
Uh-huh.
I said, I thought it was beautiful. There you are on national TV making the sign of the cross. That's wonderful. And by golly, you made it. And, you know, your teammates are high-fiving. You're running off the field. I said, so then, and there's a kind of a camaraderie between kickers.
Okay.
Because they're usually littler.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not out there mixing it up. They're not taking the hits. They're not
right. They're a specialty.
Yeah, it's a real, you know. And when they miss, man, they're sitting on the end of the bench. And it's because they've got one job: kick that ball through the crossbar. You know, the goalpost. And I said, so what were you thinking when the Oregon kicker was out there? Same situation you'd just been in a minute before. And he said, I was hoping he missed.
Human side.
He was being honest.
Yes, he was being honest. It is,
you know,
human.
As long as they got that scoreboard up there.
Right.
But it was a beautiful thing. And you'll see that sometimes. I'll see it in basketball. You'll see somebody making the sign of the cross before they shoot a free throw. And, you know, if people can mock it and can go different ways with it and say, oh, well, he made the sign of the cross. He missed the free throw. So there, you know, but it's just nice to see people frequently. You'll see it all the time now, where somebody gets interviewed after mm-hmm. winning something, and in addition to saying we're going to Disneyland, they say first and foremost, I thank the Lord.
Right.
You know.
Right. And we have to also, in interpreting the story for our children, when they see that, is that person has a tremendous amount of attention and pressure on them in that moment. And what I also see is that they're reaching for the Lord. Okay, it's you and me. I need to just have it be you and me. And I, regardless of the outcome, I know you're always there. And there's a scripture in Job 11, 13 and 17. If you set your heart aright and stretch out your hands toward him, then your life shall be brighter than the noonday. Its gloom shall become like the morning. Mm-hmm. So that really connected for me what those players are doing by doing the sign of the cross in that moment is if you stretch out your hands toward him, and then your gloom shall become like morning. And then going back to the coach of the Croatian team, he's stretching out his hand for the Lord, and the rosary in his pocket is just the symbol that he mm-hmm. uses, the tactile
right.
thing that we touch
right.
that relates, that helps him stretch his hands towards him. And then the Lord takes it from there, right? And the scripture, was it Matthew? Ask and it shall be given, mm-hmm. knock and the door shall be opened. We have to take the first action. We ask, we knock, we seek. Well, that's what the Croatian coach is doing, and that's also what those players are doing. They're reaching. And put any of us in that kind of situation. I mean, the camera shows you just all the people they're seeing in the stadium. They are all looking at him.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
incredible.
And then they'll show the cameras back at the home in the home country.
Uh-huh.
The people in the town square or something watching it on the big screen, and they're reacting
uh-huh.
Various ways, you know. And And I think it's important, too, as parents, when watching sports with our kids. It's one thing if we're watching them and sort of neutral, maybe, like me watching the World Cup. It's interesting,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not going to live or die no matter
mm-hmm.
who wins or who loses. But seeing kind of the human drama and mm-hmm. seeing how much it and sort of guiding your kids through it. But when you do feel passionately about a team and you're watching, this is where your kids are really picking up on, oh, Dad's actually really mad. He just called that guy a bum because he struck
point.
Out. It's like, oh, you know, bases loaded, you struck out, you bum, we should
yeah.
trade you, you know.
Gosh,
and,
yes.
And you know, when they see that, whoa, Dad doesn't seem this passionate about work. He doesn't seem this passionate oh. about my schoolwork. He doesn't seem that, but man, he sure cares who wins this baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of stuff they pick up on.
Yes, and what they also pick up on is if I don't succeed, someone's going to think less of me. That's also the message they take up. Because as parents, we are that model for, and then what is God going to think if I fail, you know, yeah. ultimately? And so that it is. Parenting is a huge job. We do model so much for them. The Chicago Tribune did an article on the parents behind the World Cup and saying without parent sacrifices, there would be no World Cup stars. If the parents are talking about the kicker and the game and who's ever on whatever, the field, the court, and so on, the parents are the ones that got them there, that did all the laundry. And they made a comment and they said one of the awards, I guess, is the Golden Boot for the World Cup's top scorer. And it doesn't matter if we say who it was or not, but the fact is they did award these. And the best player is a golden ball. And they commented that the FIFA should consider a new award, a golden steering wheel.
Hmm.
And that's, we have to look behind it, look beyond for that kicker, for that baseball player who's being yelled at from the stands for being a bum, like you say. But all we see is all the glory in front of it, all the game, all the people and everything else and everything that's riding on them and all those people that are putting all their hopes and joy of wanting to win on that poor kid playing Little League. But behind it, it's kind of like this pyramid that we don't see under the, like an island. Everything's underwater. Everything below it is all the parents that helped the kid, that drove them, that fed them, that did everything for them. And so when we look back on the Olympics, on the World Cup and sports, and as we cross country boundaries and boundaries of faith and belief and culture to come together as human beings, we really do need to acknowledge the bigger picture of parents. The parents were there. And if you've got a good sportsman on your team, you can look to the parents. If you've got one that throws his helmet, throws the bat more than once, they might try it once, but the parents are right in there. Nope, you're not doing that again. But continually poor sportsmanlike conduct, it's the parents.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, there have been times when it doesn't matter what sport I'm watching, where it involves youth, where I go, wow, how come the parents let them get away with that? You know what I mean?
Right.
Okay, one time you struck out and you threw your bat or you...
Right, one time, it. Yes. Yeah, yeah, we're all learning.
Yeah.
Yes, and it's a process.
You know, and then, you know, you at home you say, you know, that's not okay.
Right.
That's not okay, and here's why it's not okay.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately you say, look, you're not going to play that next game if you do that again.
Right.
I remember my dad telling me many times. He said, "I want you to just play your heart out, but don't, you know, it's not life or death, and it's not anything to ever get mad about. And your opponent has got the same hopes and dreams. Treat him with respect, and shake his hand whether you win or lose. And sportsmanship is the most important thing, you know. And there are many times where you will see. I remember, I think it was a women's softball, like a national championship, and one of the collegiate level, and this woman got up and." I can't remember the exact details, but she somehow was able to hit the ball out,
mm-hmm.
and somehow injured herself in the course of doing that, and she had to get around the bases.
Oh boy!
And players on the other team took her by the arms and helped her around because, hey, yeah, the score was tied and it's the bottom of the last inning, and she hit the game-winning home run, and now she physically. I can't remember what had happened if she had badly turned her ankle in the course.
They saw the humanness. They saw the person.
You know, they legitimately beat us, and because of some fluky thing here, she can't make it around the bases. We're going to help her. And that's where the parent watching on TV calls the whole family in and says, hey,
look at this. Yes.
Look at this. This is what this game's about. This is why... that's who you should be. You know, that's who we should all be.
Wow. And those parents found a story and they wanted that story to be transferred to those children. Look, here's a story. This is what you need. Keep this story. And going back to Jesus taught in parables, right? Stories are so important. And we as parents, that's another thing we have to do, is we have to search out good stories and we have to filter. The past generation didn't have to filter. They could trust the movie ratings. They could trust Disney. They could trust the movie, you know, the kids' movies, teen movies, adult movies. It was pretty clear. Now it's not, and so we have to filter, and which is a big job. And then we have to just search out good stories. And I will say that is a positive of social media, is that we can find good stories much easier than we don't have to depend on the stories people are giving to us. We can search them out.
Yeah.
And that's a benefit now. That is, social media is now, and the invasion, if you will, of technology in our lives. We can now search out what we are looking for to bring the story to our children. Because we can cross boundaries of culture, and they don't speak the language, and they do subtitles, and we can cross into another part of the world for a story of an athlete. And you could search on it in Google, of an athlete that helped around the bases, and the story would probably come up.
And who were those kids trapped in the cave in Thailand?
Oh, my gosh.
They were soccer players.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they got invited to World Cup. They weren't in any condition to go, but they got invited to the World Cup final and everything. And the notion that here are these boys, and the whole world is sort of captivated by what's going on.
Holding their breath, literally.
And the rescuers, the risks they took. I mean, sort of unknown, you know, the little details of it. The last people out were four divers and a doctor who once they reached the boys, they stayed. They stayed.
Yes.
They stayed there 4 or 5 days sleeping, eating, doing whatever on some hunk of dirt in a cave for 4 or 5 days. They didn't go, okay, hi, we're going to get some help and I'm getting out of here.
Right.
No, they stayed. They stayed until everybody was out and they were the last ones out.
And that's a powerful story that we will be able to use as parents.
The heroism in that of so many people and seeing how many different countries. I was reading a New York Times story about after everybody was out. They said over 10,000 people were involved in the rescue. Over 10,000. Wow. Just from people supporting. Oh, goosebumps.
That's wonderful.
And I don't think anybody understands how many people. They kept handing the kids off from one team of rescuers to, you know, here the divers are going to get them through the real difficult water, underwater parts. And then there's the hiking parts, you know, rough terrain. These kids are weak. And another team of, you know, and all the way through. And then all the supporters and all the doctors and nurses. And it was mind-boggling to see how many people from around the world got involved. And it tells you how the world still thinks life is precious.
Mm-hmm.
The world is still pro-life.
Strongly so.
As many, and I'm not just talking about abortion and that, but the whole scope of life, the lengths that we went to save 12 boys and their coach, 13 people.
Right.
It's remarkable.
It is.
It's remarkable the lengths we went to save them and the prayers that were said and the focus of the world on saving their lives.
Mm-hmm. We are strongly pro-life. We do see the value in humanness.
And I think we have to tap into that and recognize that people that are, say, on the other side of the abortion issue from us, that they share a lot of that.
I absolutely think they do. And I think that's one place technology is taking them, is giving them insight into it's a human far earlier than we ever thought.
And that's why the debate has shifted. That's why more people are becoming pro-life just on the abortion question because of that recognition. And I think a lot of people, they bought into it. It's not a life, therefore, and obviously it's still a false argument. But you know, and to just sort of demonize the other side and always say, well, they're anti-life, is it doesn't get us anywhere.
No.
You know, we have to obviously stick to our pro-life principles.
Right.
But looking at this cave rescue, I think the whole world at that point was pro-life. In a very meaningful way.
Yes, I think it reminded us and brought us back to it. And part of the work that we're doing that God's drawing us to is pro-life work. And we're on Instagram with @ pro-life hearts. And the
it's very impressive stuff.
Thank you. And it's truly all God-driven. It really is. It is the Lord, you know, sitting down and the Lord guiding. And it's very many elements. It's reaching the woman that's freaked out or a teenage mom that's freaked out, reaching out to Ireland. We know so much more than we did in 73, and we want to share with you the effect on it.
Ireland, of course, which has legalized abortion for the first time in that country's history.
And they're still not fully, how would you call it, got it going. So we're still in the easily influential stage.
Of American pro-lifers have really reached out to those in Ireland who are pro-life and said, hey, this is what we've been going through for 45 years now.
Right. Let us share with you. Yeah. We know so much more than we did now. And technology has given us, we can look in, so to speak, with the 3D sonograms and see how early it is what we recognize in our limited view, that it is human and full consent. We're with informed consent. Give a woman all the consent, all the information, fully, not just this piece that we thought in 1973, because in 2018, we know so much more. Let them make an educated decision. And part of our work is to bring a new language to it that, instead of murder, because it's so emotionally charged, is rejection mm-hmm. of a life. Understanding, looking at the world through their eyes, why women are doing it. And somebody approached us and said, are you insisting that it be illegal? Mm-hmm. And I responded and said, I want it to be not necessary, to not thought of, that they're very different, to where we would see it as a life and a person that's coming that God sent to the world with a solution, with a story.
Yeah, make it so people cherish life, mm-hmm. you know, and the law will follow the hearts and minds of the people. It always does.
It does. You know. It does.
Jane, always a pleasure.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
Thanks so much. Well, God's Heart and Hands.
God's Heart and Hands. And Instagram at ProLife Hearts.
Very good. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hello, this is Jennifer Campbell, Director of Trinity Pines Catholic Center. You're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
That's me. Welcome to you on this, or welcome back on this beautiful day the Lord has made. We should remind you that the national celebration, the 50th anniversary of Amane Vita, is July 27th and 28th at the Ontario Convention Center in Southern California. Special rates at the Doubletree, Ontario. And you can register for this and just go to celebratehv50.com. A number of great speakers will be there. We've brought you some of those speakers, and we'll continue to bring you some of those speakers as we get closer to the date. But it should be a wonderful faith-filled conference. Again, go to celebratehv50.com. Well, Gabe, we're about 7 months now into our new and improved broadcast podcast schedule.
We're now worldwide,
as
before just regional.
And I still get questions from people.
Okay.
In terms of just good old fashioned radio, we are on from 9 to 10 p.m.
Monday through Friday. Yep.
10 a.m. on Saturday morning.
Yep.
Best of.
That's correct.
And
which is hard to choose.
Hard to choose. And then, but since that time, we have expanded greatly online where you can listen to today's show for 24 hours.
Right.
Almost immediately after the show's over.
Yep.
And so if you know, it used to be you had to listen, you had to turn the radio on, and if you didn't have that time available, well, you just missed the show. Now you can, on your computer or your device, you can get it anytime.
Right. There's a couple different ways, actually, to do it as well. That's the great thing about it, is the first way is through our website, scd.org. That's www.scd.org. And SCD stands for Sacramento Catholic Diocese. So it's not just a random smattering of letters. You go there and you'll see the homepage with our Bishop Soto and a few stories and events coming up. Just kind of scroll your way down. You'll see these big circular icons. And on there is an icon for the Bishop's Hour. Click on that. And it'll take you to a page for the Bishop's Hour. It gives a brief explanation as to, you know, who we are as a show, things like that. I believe there's a bio for Bob on there. And then you'll see a thing that's called a Real Player. It basically looks like what you would, like a device would look like on your computer if you're playing music. And it has dates and names of guests. And you just click on the play button. And you can hear that show. And I think it stays up. I think we have it set up for about a week. So if you're listening on Monday, you still have Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of the previous week. That's up if it's a Monday. So you can catch up on some shows if you miss them. And then you listen to that show. I typically load them, depending on the day, usually right after the show. And then unless there's some sort of an editing issue or what have you, then it takes a little longer, but they're typically up 24 hours or a little while after the show has ended. And then, the other way to do it is through a podcast. And the great thing about the podcast is it actually, you can listen to it even further back than a week. You can listen to every one of our shows since January 1st, I believe, because that's how far back the podcast has archived them. They pretty much live forever on the internet.
What do they call it when people, now you can go on TV and you can watch the entire series of...
Yeah, you can binge watch.
Binge watch,
you
yeah.
can binge listen so, to the Bishop's Hour.
We recommend don't listen to more than 10 Bishop's Hours in a row.
Right.
Without taking a break.
Right. Without taking... Even we can't do this. yeah, you can go on...
It's amazing how technology has changed. I can't imagine watching some... whatever the show is on TV for 12 episodes or something.
I'd love to say I can't imagine it, but I've done it.
You need a big bowl of popcorn, is all I can say.
Well, I mean, you'll watch them a few days in a row, and then the thing about it that's frustrating is, you know, the television shows are such high-end shows that it takes a long time to produce them. You get done with it, and you're like, okay, now what?
And now
it's like,
what? Well,
now they're a year and a half till they go into production.
When I was a kid, you know, and when we finally got a TV, there were these shows that you... The Rockford Files. Oh, man.
Right.
And most of them in the old days, they were complete in one package. There was no carryover to the next week.
Like, right.
Oh, he's in jail. Oh, and there's the music, and then the show ends. And you go, wait a minute, why you didn't get out of jail yet?
Well, every so often there'd be a to-be-continued episode.
Yeah, once in a great while.
Once in a great while, yeah.
But then in more modern times... It's become a continuum. It's like you almost feel like if you missed the previous episode,
it's a running storyline.
Yeah, it's a running storyline. But now it's like, well, I can watch the whole series in one day. Like, now what am I going to do?
Right.
You know, it was one of those things, you'd make a date.
It was funny when you said
Wednesday at 7, we're watching. I remember my oldest daughter, she and I loved to watch Coach.
Yeah, it was a good show.
Craig T. Nelson,
and, yeah. What's his name's brother?
Jerry Van Dyke.
Yeah. Dick Van Dyke's brother.
We just loved. I was a sports writer at the time. She would come to all the games with me.
Right.
She's about 7 years old, and we would make a date to watch. We would never miss Coach. Minnesota State. And she wanted to know if it was a real place.
Right.
And it was one of those, you know, people say, you call it the boob tube, and it's just a... You know, you should be reading to your kids or something. It was a wonderful family moment.
Right.
You know, because we were sharing something, we were talking about it, and it all had good values to it and stuff. And, you know, it was great stuff. Now, if we if we could have watched every episode of Coach at the time, we probably would have, you know, and then it would have ruined the whole thing.
Yeah. No, what's funny is I remember, like, when I was a kid and things like the Rockford Files were on, you know, I think they were probably reruns by then. But shows like that, I remember, like, there being times when you'd sit down to watch a show, and we didn't really at the time have the access and the knowledge of when things, like, when the season starts, the season's over. You just know that you turn TV on at 10 o'clock and Rockford Files is on, or whatever, Matlock. You would sit down and go, oh, this is the one where he sees that guy in the thing, and you still watch it because you just, now it's like, I've seen this one, delete it.
I've already seen it.
I'll go watch another one that I haven't seen yet.
I remember in my days as a sports writer, I usually get home from covering a football game on Saturday night at about 10 o'clock. And Walker, Texas Ranger was the only thing on.
Good old Chuck Norris.
It wasn't really my kind of show, but it just sucked me in. You know, and the nice thing in those days, whether it was Rockford or Walker, Texas Ranger, none of the heroes were flawed.
Yeah.
They weren't having bad stuff on the side, but they were here. You know, none of them were flawed. They were all perfect.
Yeah,
they were good role models.
You know what's funny is that whole anti-hero thing started with, like, Shakespearean plays and you know, Greek plays, and it kind of went away for a while, and then it's become, like, the norm now with television, where, like, you watch that the Sons of Anarchy show, and it's everyone's like, there's not a good person on the show, but everyone loves it. It's like, there's no nice people on this show, but, you know, everyone's into it. I don't. Yeah, it's funny how the anti-hero has become sort of the common trope now. Anyway, but the other way we can get to it, get to the show, our show, not any of these other shows on Netflix, is go to, there's a website you can go to, Podbean, podbean.com, and look up Bishop's Hour, and you can listen to it on your device and your computer that way. And then through that site, we populate other sites like iTunes and Google Play, things like that. Those are places that typically you'll get your podcasts from. So you go there and you like iTunes or Google Play, depending on what kind of phone you have, and you can look up the Sacramento Bishop's Hour. That's what you type in. You'll see it on there. If you hit the subscribe button, it's right next to the icon of the Bishop's Hour. Hit subscribe. It'll come into your phone. Every time we have a new show, it'll load onto your phone. It won't indicate with you like a text message or email. It won't do that. You won't see it on your phone until you click on the icon for your podcast, and then it'll say, this is how many episodes you have that you haven't looked at or listened to. And then you can just click on whatever one you want. And I list all the episodes, names of our guests, and a brief synopsis of either who they are or what they're on to talk about. So, and
if you have any questions, if for some reason you can't conquer the, you go to radio@scd.org. Send Gabe an email.
I will do my best.
Say, hey, I listened to your explanation and I couldn't follow it, or I tried it.
I get that a lot.
And it didn't work. Radio@scd.org.
Call me on my line, 916-733-0107. That's my number here at the diocese.
Very good.
Okay.
Thanks, Gabe. And a reminder again, on the Humanae Vitae Conference, July 27, 28 at the Ontario Convention Center in Southern California. That's not Ontario in Canada. Ontario in Southern California. If you want to go to celebratehv50.com. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
I was sure by now, God, you would have reached down and wiped our tears away, stepped in and saved the day. But once again, I say amen, and it's still raining. But as the thunder rolls, I barely hear you whisper through the rain, I'm with you. And as your mercy falls, I'll raise my hands and praise the God who gives and takes away. Gone. How can I carry on if I can't?